Newly named Indiana State Poet Laureate Adrian Matika says Bloomington is an almost magical, mystical, fertile ground for poets and creative writers. Matika was Michael Glab's guest on Big Talk last week. Today's feature includes some of their conversation after the show. Matika also talks about his work habits, why he doesn't like to write poetry criticism, and the time his little daughter met one of the world's most famous poets.
Who's the best poet? What kind of criteria could there be?
See, that, I mean, there's no other criteria except for what we value, right? I mean, there are poets, there are young readers of poetry right now who believe that Rupi Kapoor is the best poet in the world.
Yeah, milk and honey.
Yeah, and there aren't probably more than a handful of poets who write in the tradition of Emily Dickinson or Walt Whitman who would agree with that.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter. The fact that they care and the fact that they receive her work in such a profound way means to me that it's a good thing.
Are there poetry critics?
Oh, absolutely.
Way there are novel critics,
yeah,
and so forth.
There are. And, you know, and most of that critical work gets farmed out to poets.
Other poets.
Yeah, other
so
poets.
So then you're sort of caught between a rock and a hard place then. Do I want to insult Adrian Matika? I was just, you know, I don't like this collection of poetry. This stinks.
Yeah.
Should I say that? He's a great guy. That's the thing that you have to grapple with.
Yeah, and you know, I very rarely write criticism of poetry, and one of my reasons is that there is so little attention paid to poetry as it is in a large scale, and so if I have something to write positively, then I will do that. But if I don't like it, then I'm not going to spend my time writing things about the book. So whoever's book is in front of me and I don't appreciate it, I'm not going to spend time writing about it.
Yeah, yeah.
There's so little time and so little space given to these things. I would rather spend my time and use that space to say something affirming.
Right. And let's repeat again. I believe you mentioned this earlier. It was in one of our conversations, either on record or off thus far. It all melds together. 6% of the American public reads poetry.
6%, yeah.
Which surprises me.
Yeah,
I wouldn't have thought it was that high.
You know, it sounds high, doesn't it? But
yeah,
this is also 6% of the 43% of people who read.
So it's 6% of readers read poetry.
Yeah, not 6% of the total.
Oh, wow. And the readers is less than 50% at this point.
Yeah, it's like 43% or something.
And you got this info from?
From the NEA.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. They did a study on reading habits. I'm almost positive it was last year, but it might have been 2015.
Yeah.
And it was really disheartening. But then, you know, there's the study, there's the work that the NEA did that, you know, many organizations have tried to track the habits of readers. But then there's kind of my experience being in the world as a writer and as a teacher. And it seems to me that there are so many people reading poems. Not as many as I would like, only because there are so many poems that deserve audiences.
Uh-huh.
But there are so many really dedicated readers of poetry and writers of poetry and supporters of the art. I think this is the best time, and certainly the best time I can remember, for poetry. This year, I remember the National Book Award long list came out, and, you know, it's 10 books. And there were at least 15 more that could have been on there, and I wouldn't have blinked. I don't remember a year where there were so many excellent books of poetry released at the same time, just one after another. First books, mid-career poets, the collected poems of Frank Bidart won the National Book Award. So, you know, writers at the sort of further along in their career getting well-received, just... I was joking with my graduate students about Frank Bidart's book, and I met him a few years ago and just thought I love his work, but also just a wonderful person. He was very, very kind, and he and my daughter hit it off. And I didn't have my camera, but they were just sitting on the stage talking to each other, like legs dangling off the edge of the stage. This brilliant poet who's been doing this for decades. And this little girl just sitting there talking. And I asked her later what they talked about. And she's like, well, that's just between us.
Wow. You know what? I'm going to make a prediction now. Okay. Somehow this image and memory is going to work its way into your writing somewhere, somehow.
I hope so.
Where you least expect it, I'll bet.
Yeah, I've been trying to find ways to write about my daughter lately. I used to not write about her at all because she's just, I don't know. I don't write about my wife. I don't write about my daughter. Yeah. Partially, I don't write about my wife because she's a poet.
Yeah.
And she's there. And if she doesn't like the poem, that's a different kind of thing entirely. But my daughter, I think, is... I haven't been able to figure out how to come to terms with what it means to be a father, sort of the vulnerability of that and the wonder of that. And until I have a better sense of it, I don't think I can write a poem that does her justice.
Do you and your wife, the poet, do you push each other?
You know, we don't. We work very differently, and we have different audiences for our work. Uh-huh. And so I write... frequently, I write, you know, sort of copiously, and then out of all of that, maybe, you know, 20 new poems out of those 20, maybe two will stick.
Right.
She writes one poem, and she works on that one poem for months.
Is that so? Yeah. That's fascinating. That's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, and then she'll set it aside when it's done, and then she'll work on another poem. Oh. So I work in multiple projects, multiple poems. She's singular.
And so you find the nugget.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I think the difference between our approaches, the difference between our aesthetics and just general desire for what a poem is makes it so that we don't push each other. I think we support each other. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we compete with one another because we're also in different kinds of writers. Yeah. There was something that I wanted to go back to really quick before I forgot, though. So thinking about the MFA program here and the writers who are both teachers of poetry there, but also students who have been students of poetry. I sat down and tried to make a list of poets who'd won prizes, who'd been out here doing the kind of work we all hope we could do. And, you know, poets from our MFA program have won the MacArthur Genius Grant, have won the Pulitzer, the National Book Award, have won almost every prize imaginable.
Huh.
And so I love to think that it's from the teaching, and I'd love to like take credit for that, but you know it's not the faculty. It's the program, it's the kind of writer, it's their dedication, and it's this place.
And it's Bloomington.
You see what I mean? And so I just wanted to make sure that I was able to both shout out the program, but also make clear that it exists in the way it does because of where it is.
You've been listening to Big Talk with Michael Glab, with special guest Indiana State Poet Laureate Adrian Matika. A longer interview with Matika is available on WFHB's website, wfhb.org. Tune in on Thursday afternoons after the Daily Local News to hear full episodes of Big Talk with Michael Glab.